I yelled as loud as I could. How's that for a secret signal? Laura got the message. With my ear to the door, I heard her fumbling with the heavy lock. This was the same lock that it took 2 nights to lift. I hoped that Laura had the strength to do it herself. Uncle Press could have helped, but he had his own job to take care of and was probably nowhere near the door. It was all up to Laura.
"Hurry!"
I shouted. This was one time I didn't care about sounding cool or confident. I wanted her to know how close I was to being eaten. I heard a roar, turned back to look into the quig pens, and saw it. The quig. Its yellow eyes blazed as it charged through the pools of light, picking up speed, lusting for the kill. It was getting close enough that I could see bits of saliva flying from its open mouth. This thing was hungry, and I was dinner. I threw my back against the door, hoping it would open. It didn't. I could hear Laura struggling with the lock. If she took any longer, someone would surely see her and stop her, or Rellen would push the button. One way or another, this would all be over in a few seconds. The quig crouched lower to the ground. It was getting ready to pounce.
"If you don't open the door," I shouted, "this quig is going to..."
With a loud creak, the door swung open and I fell back. At that exact moment, the quig sprang. But because I had fallen down, it sailed over me and through the open door into the stadium. I swear I felt the breeze from its paws as they sailed over my head, inches from slicing me to pieces. I quickly jumped to my feet and ran into the stadium to see what was happening. The next few seconds were critical. It all came down to what the quig did, and Uncle Press. The stadium was in total chaos. The quig was out of control. Several Bedouin knights ran onto the field to try and capture it, or kill it. I saw that Lore had been attacked by 2 knights. But Lore wasn't their problem anymore. They let her go and went after the quig. I helped her to her feet, and the two of us took cover next to the open door. The monster quig had taken a stand. It went from offense to defense as the knights attacked it with their spears. I'm not sure who was doing more damage, the quig or the knights. For every spear they threw at the wild animal, the quig must have slashed 2 knights. It was in a total frenzy of anger, pain, and blood. But the main thing is that the battle to contain the quig had done exactly what I hoped it would. It disrupted the events that were taking place in the ring. I looked to the center of the ring to see what Rellen was doing. He must have been momentarily stunned by the sudden appearance of the quig, because he stood there with the other miners staring at the action. That didn't last long. He snapped out of it and went for the ore car full of tack. This was it. This was the moment. Rellen was going to push the button. From the corner of my eye, I saw a black streak headed toward Rellen. It was a flying spear. The missile flew at the chief miner and stabbed him right in the forearm, pinning him to the side of the wooden ore car. Rellen screamed out in pain. But I'm not sure if it was a scream of pain or of frustration because he couldn't get to the tack bomb. Then I saw a Bedouin knight run up to the ore car. But I knew this wasn't a Bedouin knight. It was Uncle Press. He was going for the detonator. Rellen couldn't move, but the other miners could. They realized what Uncle Press was doing and attacked him. These simple miners were no match for my uncle. Uncle Press was a blur of arms and legs as he took the miners on and knocked them down one by one. There was no way he was going to let any of them get to the detonator. It was an amazing sight. The Bedouin knights had all but killed the quig, and Uncle Press was in full command of Rellen and the miners. I couldn't believe it. My plan had worked. No sooner did I think that the worst was over than all hell broke loose again. I had forgotten there was another quig in the pen, and the door was still open. The second quig charged out onto the field with just as much fury as the first. But the knights were spent, and they didn't have the strength or the will to kill another quig. This was going to be a slaughter. There was nothing to stop this murderous quig, except for Uncle Press. Uncle Press had finished off the last miner, then quickly and carefully pulled the small homemade bomb out from under the ore car full of tack. Rellen tried to stop him, but he was literally pinned to the wooden car and could barely move. The Quig crouched down on all fours and surveyed the scene. It was looking for its first victim, and it quickly made its decision. It wanted Uncle Press.
"Uncle Press!" I shouted.
Uncle Press looked up to see the Quig heading for him at a dead run. Without a second of hesitation, he heaved the small bomb at the charging Quig. I didn't know if he pushed the button as he threw or not, but whatever happened, the results were spectacular and gruesome. The small bomb of tack hit the Quig in midair and exploded. The force of the tack ripped into the beast and tore it apart, sending pieces of bloody Quig raining down on the entire field. Oh, it was disgusting and beautiful at the same time. The Quig was killed, and the means to explode the bigger bomb was gone. There was an odd calm in the stadium now. It was like no one understood what just happened, or what to do next. Many of the Bedouin knights were injured or just plain exhausted from their battle with the Quig. Kagan stood in her royal box looking down on the carnage. She must have been really confused, because she wasn't even eating. The Bedouin spectators watched in stunned silence. They had no idea if what had happened was planned or some horrible mistake. Only the Novans reacted. They gave their typical polite applause. Gotta love those guys. I looked to Lore and said, "What took you so long with the door?" "I had two knights on my back," she answered. Not only had she lifted the heavy lock, she did it while fighting off two of the Bedouin knights. Uncle Press walked over to Relan and pulled the spear out of his arm, releasing him. He then gave him a rag to tie his wound. Lore and I joined them. Nobody knew what to say. I couldn't tell if Relan was angry, disappointed, in pain, or all the above. That's when Relan started to laugh. It was the last reaction I expected. It was the same kind of crazy laugh I heard from him down in the mines. It was like he knew something we didn't know. Again, it gave me the creeps. Finally, Relan said,
"You think this is over, but it is not."
"Yes, it is," said Uncle Press. "You have no way to explode this tack now."
Relan laughed even harder. What was going through his mind?
"But this is not all the tack that was brought from the mines," he said. "This grand weapon may have failed, but the signal has been given just the same. It was you who gave that signal, Press, my friend."
The three of us looked at each other, befuddled. What was he talking about? Then it hit me. I remembered what Relan had said to me the night before. He said that as soon as his miners heard the explosion, it would be their signal to attack. And there had certainly been an explosion. Granted, it wasn't the big boom everybody was expecting, but it was pretty loud just the same. There were Quig guts all over the place as proof. Could the Malago miners have heard it? The answer to that question came right away. A horn sounded from on top of the stadium. All eyes looked up to see a lone Bedouin knight standing there.
"The Malago!"
he shouted for all to hear.
"They're attacking!"
Instantly, the Bedouin knights scrambled. Even the knights who had bravely fought the Quig and were wounded jumped to attention. They grabbed their spears, straightened their helmets, and quickly climbed up the stairs of the stadium. "Look," said Lore, and pointed toward Kagan's royal box. What we saw were more knights, hundreds of them, all piling out from inside the palace to join their comrades. Queen Kagan stood on her throne, laughing and clapping like a child, cheering them on. To her, this was a game. She had no idea that these men were headed into a very real battle. Or maybe she just didn't care. The knights were now several hundred strong. They looked like a formidable fighting unit. They marched up the stairs of the stadium to join with their comrades and begin the defense of the palace. Then an odd thing happened. The Bedouin spectators began climbing the stairs to the surface as well. They were excitedly laughing and chatting with anticipation. They were followed in turn by the Novans. This was unbelievable. It was like they wanted to watch the battle for themselves. Did they think this was going to be a show put on for their amusement, like the Quig battles? Did they have any idea what was about to happen? Relan said,
"We may not have made our grand statement, but we will still have our battle. We are armed with tack, and we will triumph. Your efforts have been in vain. The battle is about to begin."
Journal Number 4, Continued. Denderon.
Much of what I am going to write about now was told to me after the battle. As I wrote before, I have no doubt that it is all true, and I have no problem adding it to my journal. I'll try to recount it in the order that it happened. When Alder left us to warn the Malago villagers about the bomb, nobody listened to him as he ran through the village shouting, "Everyone, into the mines! You must protect yourselves!" But I guess none of the villagers even knew about Tak, let alone about the huge bomb that was supposed to blow away the Bedouin, so when Alder came running through like a nut job, they slammed their doors in his face and ignored him. I don't blame them. If a guy ran around all chicken little, screaming that the sky was falling, I'd probably ignore him too. Alder quickly realized that trying to save them was futile. His last hope was to find the one group of people who might listen to him, the miners who were preparing for battle. They knew about Tak, and they knew about Relan's mad plan, so Alder ran out to the training area where Relan and his miners had captured us the day before. What he found there was a frightening sight. All the miners of the Malago had assembled. There were hundreds of them. It never seemed like there were all that many miners living in the village, but that was because most of them were usually in the mines. Not today. All the miners were now on the surface, and they were ready to rumble. According to Alder, they had emptied the secret stash of weapons from down in the mines, and each of them was armed with either spears or bows and arrows. But more important, several of the miners carried a much more lethal weapon. Around their waists were leather pouches full of small tack bombs. As Alder ran through the crowd looking for someone in charge, he looked into the eyes of these hardened miners. He told me that what he saw gave him a chill. Even though they were about to begin a battle that could cost them their lives, these guys showed no fear. I suppose a lifetime of slavery will do that to you. They wanted blood, Bedouin blood. They may not have been trained warriors, but what they lacked in fighting skills was made up for with pure hatred for the Bedouin. They were confident, too. Once Relan exploded his bomb, they figured that most of the Bedouin knights would die instantly. Any of the knights who survived would be easy to mow down with their precious tack. They thought the battle would be short and sweet. They were absolutely, totally wrong. Alder finally found the leader. It was a miner who stood toward the front of the group, giving orders. Alder ran up to him and said breathlessly,
"The bomb! The tack bomb! It is more deadly than you could imagine. If Relan succeeds, it could kill us all. We must get everyone down into the mines to—"
That's when it happened. That's the moment when Uncle Press threw the small bomb at the Quig and made Quig burger. The miners all looked in the direction of the Bedouin castle as the explosion thundered through the hills. Then, just as the last echo died away, the leader shouted,
"Death to the Bedouin!"
There was a huge cheer, and the miners began running toward the castle. Alder had to dive out of the way for fear of being trampled by the stoked-up miners as they rushed to their destiny. They had no idea that they were headed right into the full force of the Bedouin army. The stadium was almost empty. Even Queen Kagan had left to watch the show. Four Novans had lifted up her throne and carried her up the stairs and out to the battlefield. Those pale little guys must be a lot stronger than they looked, because that throne and that fatso must have weighed a ton. The three miners who brought the tack bomb with Relan were gone too. They had run off to fight with their comrades. The only ones left in the huge stadium were me, Lore, Uncle Press, Relan, and a dead Quig. Actually, two dead Quigs, but the second one looked more like Hamburger Helper.
Relan struggled to get to his feet. Uncle Press gave him a hand. These guys weren't enemies. They both wanted the same thing. Sort of. Their only disagreement was how to go about getting it.
"Your miners aren't prepared to battle those knights," Uncle Press said to him. "The Tak may prolong the fight, but the Bedouin will crush them."
"Perhaps," said Relan. "But better to die fighting than as a slave."
Those were powerful words. I had seen the horrible lives the Malago lived. If they were going to die, at least now they would die with some dignity. It was a terrible choice, but maybe it was the right one. Relan then said,
"Permit me to join my men."
Uncle Press picked up the spear he had used to stop Relan from exploding the bomb. He looked at it, then handed it to the chief miner.
"Good luck," he said.
Relan took the spear, gave a small nod of thanks, then took off running to join his doomed men. We watched him run across the stadium grass and bound up the stairs toward the battle that was about to begin. I wondered if I would ever see the guy alive again. Uncle Press then picked up another spear. "What are you doing?" I asked.
"I'm going back to the Malago village," he answered. "The Bedouin are going to suffer casualties. That's never happened to them before. I'm afraid they'll get angry enough to continue on to the Malago village and take it out on some of the villagers."
"But how can you stop that?" asked Lore.
"I can't," was his answer. "But I can help Alder get them down into the mines. The knights won't go down there, and it'll give them a chance to cool off."
"We're coming with you," I said.
"No,"
ordered Uncle Press, and pointed to the ore car full of tack.
"See what you can do about that bomb."
"Like what?" I asked. Uncle Press started to run off, but turned back to us and shouted,
"I don't know. Get rid of it. Dump it in the ocean. Just don't let the Bedouin have it."
I watched as Uncle Press ran up the stairs. After a quick wave back to us, he disappeared over the lip of the stadium and was gone. I looked to the ore car, then to Lore. "Is he crazy?" I said. "This is too heavy to carry up those stairs." Lore started grabbing the glaystones from off the top and throwing them aside like they were common rocks. "Not if we make the load lighter," she said. "And what if we slip and drop it down those stairs?" I countered. "It'll make just as big a bang now as before." "Then we must be careful not to drop it," she shot back. "Yeah, no kidding." I walked over to the cart and tested the weight. It was heavy. It had four wheels that rolled on the rails down in the mines, and handles both front and back that were used to push or pull it. I didn't care how strong Lore was, the two of us were not going to lug this thing up the stadium stairs. I reached in and dug down beneath the glaze until I found the tack. It was soft, like clay. I was thinking maybe we could pull it apart into smaller pieces and take it up that way, rather than transport the whole thing at once. I scraped it with my finger and pulled out a small piece. For something so deadly, it looked pretty innocent. Like I wrote before, it was rust-colored and soft like silly putty. I easily rolled it into a marble-sized ball. The texture was kind of gritty, and there was residue that stuck to my fingers as I rolled it. "Are you going to help me?" asked Lore impatiently as she unloaded the glaze. "I have an idea," I announced, and ran toward the quig pen. Lore watched me as if I had lost my mind, but she needn't have worried. My plan didn't involve going back into Quig World. No way. In fact, as an afterthought, I stuck the little ball of tack into my pocket to free my hands, and then closed the door to the pen just in case any more of those bad boys were wandering around inside. It was a smart thing to do, but it wasn't the main reason I went over there. I was looking for the water faucet where the Bedouin knight filled the water bucket that he used to wash away the blood of the Malago miner. When I found it, I turned the handle so that water poured out slowly. I then checked my fingers to find that they were still covered with the rusty-colored tack residue. I stuck my fingers under the faucet, rubbed them together, and the tack dissolved. That was exactly what I hoped would happen. This stuff may be a powerful explosive, but it was still a natural mineral that would dissolve in water. Thank you, Mr. Gill and 8th grade earth science.
He thought I was asleep in class most of the time. I wasn't. "What are you doing?" shouted Lore. I quickly grabbed one of the wooden buckets that was near the faucet, filled one, and lugged it back to Lore and the ore car. "We are wasting time, Pendragon," Lore said with growing impatience. I ignored her and dumped the bucket of water into the ore car. Lore had this angry look on her face like I was being an idiot again. I stood back with the empty bucket and watched. In a few seconds, my patience was rewarded. It was only a small drip, but the water had worked itself down through the tack and was running out between the wooden floorboards of the ore car. The water was rust-colored, which could mean only one thing. The tack could be dissolved. "We don't have to lug this thing out," I announced. "We can dissolve the tack like dirt." Lore stuck her finger under the drip of water and saw that it was indeed full of dissolved tack. She thought a moment, then said, "More water." She jumped to her feet and ran back to the faucet for another bucket. For the next 10 minutes, we ran back and forth between the faucet and the ore car, dumping water inside. Little by little, the tack turned into liquid and ran out of the car. When enough of the tack dissolved so that we could move it, we began taking turns pushing it around. My idea was to spread the tack around enough so that its power would be diluted all over the field. The rusty liquid ran out of the car, poured onto the field, and sank down below the grass like some deadly fertilizer. I had no idea what kind of problems this would cause later on. For all I knew, once the tack dried, this could be like a minefield. But I didn't care. The main thing was that the power of the huge bomb was gone forever. Finally, I took a look inside the ore car to see that most of the tack was dissolved away. There were still some remnants clinging to the wooden car, but there wasn't enough left to do any big damage. I guess you could say that we had successfully liquidated the bomb. I looked to Lore and smiled. "Or we could have tried carrying it out," I said with a touch of sarcasm. I didn't get many chances to dig Lore, so I took them where I could. She looked as if she wanted to say something in return, but was having trouble finding the words. I expected her to point out how I had done something stupid after all. "I am a warrior," she finally said. "I was raised to fight my enemies with force. That is not what you were taught."
Uh-oh, here we go. I was sure she was about to tell me what a weenie I was and that we should have muscled the ore car out of the stadium.
"But maybe that is good," she went on. "Maybe that is why we are together. You are not a warrior, yet you have shown more bravery than any warrior I have known."
Wow, that was out of left field. After getting slammed by her at every turn, I wasn't expecting a compliment. I didn't know what to say. I thought about what she said and realized that maybe she was right. I wasn't a fighter and wasn't planning on becoming one, so maybe our strengths complemented each other.
I wrote to you before about the feeling I got that being here felt right. Well, as I stood there with Lore, I got the same feeling. The two of us being together felt right.
We weren't exactly buddies, but maybe we were meant to be partners. It must have been hard for her to admit that I was her equal, at least when it came to the bravery department, and I wanted to say something back to her that let her know how great I thought she was. But I didn't get the chance. Before I could open my mouth, I saw something that I could barely believe.
"What is the trouble?" asked Lore.
All I could do was point. Standing in the royal box was Figgis, the little merchant of death who started this whole tack mess. What was he doing here? How did he get into the palace? Stranger still, he must have known what Relan was trying to do with this bomb, so why did he hang around here knowing the whole place was going to blow up?
"This is strange," she said. "Why is he here?"
As if in answer, Figgis raised his hand to show us something he was holding. It was the yellow walkie-talkie that was taken from me in Queen Kagan's chambers. He held it up and giggled.
"It is the talking toy," exclaimed Lore. "What is he doing with that?"
My heart sank. We had dodged a huge bullet,
but here was another one aimed right at us. Lore looked at me and recognized how scared I was.
"Pendragon, what is the matter?" Lore shouted.
"The walkie-talkie works the same way the flashlight does," I answered. "It has a battery that gives off a charge of power."
"Could he use it to explode another bomb?"
she asked, nervously.
"Well, yeah," I answered soberly.
Now Lore looked sick, as the reality of the situation hit her.
"Do you think he has another bomb?" she asked soberly.
"I don't know," I answered, "but we better find out." I took a step toward the royal box and called out,
"Figgis, we want to talk with you!"
In answer, Figgis abruptly turned and ran back into the palace.
"Come on!"
I shouted, and ran for the royal box. Lore was right behind me. We both hit the stairs and ran up three at a time until we hit the royal box. Without hesitation, we ran into the Bedouin palace after the strange little man who was responsible for finding the power to destroy all of Denderon. Outside of the palace, the two armies were drawing closer. The Malago miners were making their way through the dense forest, while the Bedouin knights massed along the far side of a giant open field. This grassy, sloping field was where the long-awaited battle would take place. Behind the Bedouin was nothing but ocean. Behind the Malago would be forest. Between them was a huge expanse of empty field with nothing to use for protection but seagrass. The Bedouin knights knew what they were doing. They had trained to protect their palace from marauders. They lined up in rows with shield carriers first, followed by archers, followed by spear carriers on horseback. They were ready. Alder later told me how he ran through the forest with the miners, trying to get them to turn back. But no one listened. They were locked and loaded and primed for a fight. But when they got to the edge of the forest, the leader held up his hand and the miners stopped short of charging out into the open. It was a smart thing to do, for he saw something that the rest of the miners hadn't yet seen. Standing across from them on the far side of this vast field were the Bedouin knights. But they did not look like a straggle of injured survivors who were reeling from a devastating explosion. Just the opposite. There were more knights standing there than the Malago knew existed. They didn't look any worse for wear, either. They were strong and healthy and well-armed. Obviously, something had gone wrong. The explosion didn't do the damage they had hoped. This battle wasn't going to be the cakewalk they had anticipated. This was going to be a dogfight, and they were going up against the best dogs in town. The Malago leader held his army back, not entirely sure of what to do. The rest of the Malago miners had now seen the vast army of knights, and it shook their confidence. The only thing that Alder could do was watch and pray. When Lore and I ran into the palace, we found ourselves in Queen Kagan's empty chambers. We got our bearings, then dashed out into the corridor. I looked toward the stairs and caught a quick glimpse of Figgis scampering down.
"There!"
I shouted, and ran after him. Lore was right behind me. We got to the stairs and started down. They were wide, spiraling stairs, and as we ran down, we could see that Figgis was far below, headed for the lowest levels of the palace. We bounded down the stairs as fast as we could without taking a header and breaking our necks. When we hit the bottom, I saw that my boombox was there, only it was in pieces. That's how the knights finally got it to stop playing. They smashed it. I guess no one knew how to use the on-off switch. Idiots. I had the presence of mind to dig through the debris for the batteries. It may have been a little too late, but at least nobody could use these batteries to blow anything up. We both took a quick look around for Figgis and heard a familiar giggle coming from down the corridor. The thought came to me that he was playing with us. But it didn't matter. We had to stop him. So we took off down the corridor.
"He is going for the mines," she said. "He must know the secret entrance."
She was right. That's probably how he got into the palace in the first place.
Since we knew the way, we didn't bother looking down every corridor for the little guy. We headed right for the kitchen, which led to the pantry, which led to the trap door and the tunnels that would drop us down into the secret passage of the Malago mine that stretched beneath the palace. In the forest, the Malago leader didn't know what to do. This wasn't the way it was supposed to happen. They weren't supposed to fight the Bedouin army at its best. Should he attack or retreat? His decision would clearly decide the future of his tribe. Luckily for him, the responsibility for making a decision was soon taken away from him. With a roar of excitement from the miners, he looked to see a familiar face making his way toward him through the crowd. It was Relan. He was here to take charge. The sight of their trusted leader sent a rumble of relief through the Malago miners, not to mention to the interim leader who no longer had to be in charge anymore. It must have been a stirring sight, seeing their leader walking confidently to the front of his troops to take command. He jumped onto a rock so that all the Malago could see him and announced,
"My brave Malago brothers, today is the day. Now is the time. This is where our slavery ends."
The miners all gave a cheer. Relan was stirring them up again.
"Bring the tack to bear,"
he commanded, and all of the miners who had the tack and slingshots came to the front of the group.
"Are we prepared to take back our lives?"
Everyone let out a whooping cheer. They were no longer concerned about why he hadn't died. He was their inspirational leader, and they trusted him.
"Are we prepared to win our freedom?"
Another cheer.
"Are we prepared to make the Bedouin pay for their crimes against us?"
That brought the biggest cheer of all. They were ready.
"Then do not stop until we have reached the throne room."
That was it. The miners went nuts, and the charge was on. With the tack throwers first, they charged out of the forest and onto the field to meet their enemy. While this was going on, Laura and I dropped down the ladders into the Malago mine. No sooner did we hit the tunnel than Laura stopped short, her ear to the air. "Listen," she said. I did. And after a second I heard what she was talking about. It was footsteps. Running footsteps. Figgis wasn't far away. But the strange thing was, they were coming from deeper in the tunnel. That didn't make sense because the tunnel didn't go on much farther. There was nothing beyond the end of this tunnel but a long drop to the sea. So where was that sound coming from? Laura didn't stop to think, as usual. She headed deeper into the tunnel. Her senses told her that someone was back there running, and she didn't bother to let logic stop her from following her instinct. All I could do was follow. We didn't go more than 20 yards before we came upon another offshoot from the main tunnel. It was a crudely dug side tunnel that was wide enough for one person to pass at a time. This is where Figgis went, so this is where we had to go too. As always, Lore went first. She ran into the tunnel, unafraid of what she might find. Well, that was cool with me. She was the macho end of this duo, after all. Luckily, the tunnel wasn't all that dark because there was enough light that seeped in from the main tunnel to let us see our way. "I see the far end," Laura announced. "This tunnel connects with another tunnel." I looked ahead and saw that she was right. This side tunnel connected with another large tunnel. But it soon proved to be more than just a shortcut. Before we reached the other end, the side tunnel grew wide and opened up into a large space. We stopped, trying to figure out why this cavern existed so deep inside the Malago mine. I took a step and felt something weird under my feet. It was a soft, springy sensation, like walking on tiny bits of rubber. I knelt down and scooped up a bit of the stuff to give it a close look. It had the feel of eraser dust. You know, the stuff you brush off your paper after erasing something. It didn't take me long to realize what it really was, though, and my heart nearly stopped. "What is it?" asked Lore.
It's tack," I said with a dry mouth. "I think we just found out where Figgis got the tack. He mined it from right here."
That is right,
came a giggling voice from the tunnel ahead.
Figgis,
shouted Lore, and continued on to the end of the side tunnel. I followed her out and into the wider tunnel on the far side. When I hit the intersection, I saw that this next tunnel stretched out in two directions. Ore car track was at our feet, and an empty ore car sat on the tracks to our right. It was an ancient Malago mine tunnel. I looked at the floor and saw there was a lot more rusty tack dust coating everything. This must have been residue from when Figgis mined the stuff out of the rock, like gold dust. A thin layer of the deadly stuff was everywhere. But there was something else strange about this place. It looked somehow familiar. The ore car, the opening to the side tunnel, the pile of rocks in front of the opening. I felt as if I'd been here before. That's when my ring began to glow. I looked to Lore, and she had already seen her own ring glowing. We had indeed been here before. This was the tunnel that held the gate to the flume. When we used the flume the other day, we had no idea that we were close to Figgis's source for tack. I looked to my left, and sure enough, a few yards down the tunnel was the wooden door that led to the flume. "Why does this whole setup give me the creeps?" I asked Lore. She felt it too. Why would Figgis lead us down to the one place that he would want to keep secret? The answer came in the form of a rumble. "What is that?" asked Lore nervously. I listened. The rumble grew louder. It was either thunder, an earthquake, or... "Cave in!" I shouted. I grabbed Lore's hand and ran along the track in the direction that would take us back to the main cavern of the mine. We passed the door to the flume and got only a few steps further when the ceiling in front of us collapsed. Tons of rock and gravel fell down, blocking our way out. My first thought was to go for the gate and jump into the flume, but we couldn't leave Denderon. Not now. So we ran back into the tunnel and dove into the side tunnel that led to Figgis's tack mine. No sooner had we entered the tack mine than another cave-in sealed off the smaller tunnel ahead of us. Rocks tumbled down from the ceiling and poured into the small cavern. I took a few steps back and fell down on my butt. When I turned to get up, I came face to face with something that had tumbled down in front of me when the ceiling collapsed. It was a skeleton. I'm not ashamed to admit it. I screamed. Yes, I screamed like an idiot in a Scooby-Doo cartoon. I quickly scrambled away and Lore helped me to my feet. The two of us stood there holding each other, not sure of what to do. It seemed as if the cave-in had stopped, at least for the time being. Lore looked at the skeleton and said, "It must be a miner who was trapped here." That made sense. But then I saw something that threw her theory out the window. I took a closer look at the skeleton. He wore rotted-out leather clothing that marked him as Malago. But there was something else, something unique, that made me want to scream all over again. The corpse wore an eye patch. The cloth was shredded and dangled down from the empty socket. But it had definitely once been a patch. And that's not all. On each of his bony fingers was a braided green ring. I had seen this only once before, and remembered it all too well. This wasn't any miner. "It's Figgis," I said, trying not to sound too freaked out.
"That cannot be," exclaimed Lore, "unless we have been chasing a ghost."
Then a voice came from behind us.
"I am afraid it is indeed Figgis."
Both Lore and I spun to see someone standing in the opening to the tack mine. It was Figgis. Huh? The guy looked pretty healthy for a... okay, I'll say it. For a ghost.
"The poor little man died a few years ago," he said. "Such a tragedy. He set traps to protect his little find here. That's why the ceiling collapsed. He didn't want anybody else to steal it from him. He died setting one of those traps. So sad. Such a visionary and so dead.
My mind was not getting around any of this. We stood there, staring at Figgis, uncomprehending.
I see you have not figured this out yet, he said, with a smug smile. Let me make things easier for you.
And then the little man began to transform. I had seen this happen once before, in a lonely subway station in the Bronx. His hair grew long, and his body grew back to its normal height of 7 feet. His leather Malago clothes changed into an all-black suit, and his eyes flashed with icy blue intensity. Yes, we were looking at Saint Dane, and he had us trapped under a ton of rock, with no escape.
I told you, Pendragon, he said with a smile. You can't beat me.
Journal number 4. Continued. Denderon. The Malago miners charged out of the forest. The attack was on. The Bedouin knights didn't budge. They wanted to see what these bold peasants had planned. The first line of miners stopped and loaded their slingshots with tack. On command, they flung their explosives at the waiting Bedouin. The small tack bombs flew across the battlefield and exploded on impact. But they had fallen far short of the front line of the Bedouin defense. If they were going to do any damage, they were going to have to get closer, which meant they had to put themselves within range of the Bedouin archers. The Bedouin, on the other hand, were surprised by the explosions that blasted down in front of them. Except for the quig that had been blown to bits in the stadium, they had never witnessed anything like this. There was a movement along the lines to retreat, but the Bedouin commander wouldn't let them budge. They were going to hold their ground. The Bedouin commander sent a line of shield carriers to the front. These brave men stood in line like a barrier of steel and flesh to protect their comrades from the incoming missiles. Behind them, the archers stood ready to release their arrows as soon as the Malago miners were in range. This was going to get real ugly, real quick. But I didn't know any of this until afterward. Right now, I had my own problem to deal with, which was Saint Dane. There was no way out. We were trapped by 2 cave-ins that were caused by Figgis's booby traps. The only way out of this seemed to be through the flume. But it might as well have been a mile away, because standing between us and the gate was Saint Dane. You brought the tack here, didn't you? I spat at the guy.
I did no such thing, he said, acting all innocent. Tack is natural to Denderon. Figgis discovered this vein several years ago.
He walked over to one of the walls and scraped off a layer of dirt with his hand. As the dirt fell away, I saw beneath it the familiar rusty red color of tack. I looked to Lore, and for the first time since we met, she looked scared. That's because she realized, as I did, that this entire cavern was made of tack. The bomb we had dissolved in the stadium was like a firecracker compared to this cavern, and we were standing in the middle of it.
Figgis thought the miners could use the tack to help them tunnel through the rock,
Saint Dane explained.
It was noble of him, but he was a merchant, and he thought like one. He wanted to help the miners, but he also wanted to make a profit.
The evil traveler walked over to the skeleton that used to be Figgis, and nudged the bones with his foot.
I can't say that I blame him, but his greed proved to be his undoing. He set traps all over this cavern to protect his precious find. Unfortunately, one of them backfired.
He kicked Figgis's skull, and it rolled away from the body and landed at our feet. I wanted to kick it back just to keep it away from me, but that would have been gross. So you came to Denderon and took his place, I said, and you showed the Malago miners how to use tack as a weapon.
"Of that I am guilty,"
he said with a proud smile.
"But we stopped you," Lore shot back at him. "Relan did not use the bomb."
Saint Dane answered this with a laugh.
"I didn't like that. When bad guys laugh, it means they know something you don't."
"But it is better this way,"
he said with smug authority.
"If that bomb had blown up, it would have taken much longer for the Malago to regroup. Now, once they have won their little war, they will still be strong enough to begin their march across Denderon. I suppose I should thank you, Pendragon."
"Oh, man, was it possible? By preventing that bomb from going off, did I make things worse?"
"And what if they don't win the war?" I asked. "What if the Bedouin win?"
Saint Dane brushed more dirt off the walls, revealing more tack.
"No matter,"
he said with a shrug.
"There is an endless supply of tack. It may take time, but the Malago will come back. They will find new ways to use this lovely weapon. It is inevitable, Pendragon. This will soon become a territory at war. Denderon will fall, and when it does, it will be the beginning of the end of Hala."
Hala. There was that word again. This was all about Hala.
On the battlefield above, the Malago miners had crept closer to the Bedouin knights. They were now within range to slingshot the tack into the front line of shield carriers. The frightened Bedouins huddled beneath their shields as the tack bombs smashed into them. With small explosions, the tack burst on impact against the shields and threw a blast of fire into the ranks. Several of the Bedouin knights died right there. Others got smart and realized it wasn't a good thing to let the small rock bombs hit their shields. They began to dodge out of the way rather than shield themselves as the tack bombs rained down, setting off explosions that tore up the ground. That's when the next line of Bedouin knights began sending their arrows. They were too far away to take direct aim, so they arched their arrows high into the air toward the Malago. The black little streaks shot across the sky and rained down on the Malago silently. Some found their mark. Others stuck harmlessly into the ground, but there were enough arrows in the air to prevent the Malago miners from flinging their tack uncontested. Watching this all from a safe distance from the battlefield were the rest of the Bedouins and the Novans. They had spread out along the grassy bluffs to witness the spectacle, as if it were a show put on for their amusement. Children played, musicians performed, and food was passed around as though at some kind of summer festival. Queen Kagan was positioned in the center of it all and stood on her throne to get the best view possible. In the Malago village, Uncle Press had found Alder, and the two of them tried again to warn the villagers to hide in the mines. The villagers knew Uncle Press, so at least they didn't slam doors in his face. But time after time they got the same response. To a person, the villagers were prepared to do battle with the Bedouin. It didn't matter if they were women or children, or the elderly or the sick. None of them feared death, nor did they fear the Bedouin. Their only fear was having to continue to live the horrible lives they had been born into. No, these people were not about to run and hide. If the Bedouin knights got past the miners, they would be ready, and they would fight. Frustrated, Uncle Press and Alder ran quickly to the battlefield. Arrows rained down on the Malago while tack bombs scattered the front lines of the Bedouin. Uncle Press and Alder were stymied. They wanted the Malago to defeat the Bedouin, but not with tack. The true enemy here was tack. But if they somehow convinced the Malago to stop using it, the miners would be overrun by the Bedouin. It was a no-win situation. And speaking of no-win situations, Saint Dane had just said something that scared me to death. He said that the fall of Denderon was the beginning of the end for Hala. Uncle Press said Hala was everything that existed. Every place, every territory, every time that ever was. If Saint Dane succeeded in destroying Hala, did that mean that the entire universe would be destroyed?
The thought was too huge to comprehend. "Why do you want to destroy Hala?" I asked. Saint Dane laughed. Great. More laughing. I hated that.
"You are young, Pendragon," he said. "There is much you do not know, but I will say this. When Hala crumbles, I will be there to pick up the pieces."
That sounded ominous. "I don't believe you," I said. "How can one man control the destiny of the entire universe?" Saint Dane ran his hand over the wall of tack.
"It is like lining up dominoes," he said. "Pushing over the first domino takes almost no effort, but when it falls, it knocks down the next, and the next, and the next, until before long there is nothing left but a pile of toys in complete disarray. The territory of Denderon is my first domino."
It was true. Denderon was only the beginning. Saint Dane would then turn to the next territory, and the next. It would only be a matter of time before he worked his evil on Lore's home territory of Zadah, and set his sights on our home, on Second Earth.
"Your mother is dead," Saint Dane said to Lore. "But what of the rest of your family on Zadah? And you, Pendragon, what of your family on Second Earth? And your friends, what are their names? Mark and Courtney? When the dominoes fall, they will all be caught in the crush."
I wanted to scream. It was like he had read my mind. This guy was evil.
"But this does not have to be a tragedy,"
he said with an oily smile.
"Think of it as an opportunity. You two are strong. You have powers that you cannot imagine. If you joined me, I would teach you how to use them. Fighting against me is impossible, but fighting with me can bring you untold rewards. You could protect your loved ones and live to rule Hala beside me. It is a wonderful thing I am offering you."
On the battlefield above, things were getting worse. The Malago had been able to keep the Bedouin back while suffering only minor casualties. The Bedouin side of the field was a mess. There were fires burning everywhere, and the tack had chewed up the ground. However, the Bedouin casualties were very few. They had mostly managed to avoid the incoming tack. Now the Bedouin commander realized that the incoming bombs were slowing down. The Malago were running out of their strange and horrible weapon. Relan watched the action from behind the spear carriers. His worst fears were coming true. The Malago had used up most of their attack bombs, yet the Bedouin were still a mighty force. Soon they would be out of tack altogether, and the Bedouin would overrun them. Their only hope of victory was to strike while the Bedouin knights were still back on their heels. Relan needed to summon every bit of courage he had in order to do what must be done. He stood up behind his miners, grabbed a spear, and shouted,
"Freedom!"
The miners screamed in defiance and ran across the field toward their enemy. The Bedouin commander seemed stunned that these peasant miners would have the audacity to challenge his vaunted knights. But if a fight was what they wanted, he was willing to oblige. He motioned for his spear carriers on horseback to come forward. With a sweep of his hand, he sent the knights charging toward the oncoming Malago. Alder and Uncle Press watched in horror as these two tribes ran to meet each other in the center of the field. Queen Kagan jumped up and down, giggling with delight. Only one thing was certain. It was going to be bloody. In the mine below, Saint Dane waited for our response to his offer. He had asked us to join him in his mad quest to control all that exists, and threatened that our loved ones would die if we refused. It seemed as if we had run out of options. The guy scared the life out of me. I hated looking at him, so I looked down at the ground. What I saw there started me thinking. I saw rusty tack dust stuck to the Bedouin shoes I had been wearing. I kept my head down and looked around the small cavern to see that tack dust was everywhere. It coated the floor and the walls, and even seemed to hang in the air. That's when I remembered something. It was something I had done a while ago without thinking. I didn't know it at the time, but it might turn out to be the key to saving Denderon. My mind raced. If I was going to make a move, it had to be now. I had no idea what was happening in the battlefield above, but after what St. Dane had said, it really didn't matter. This wasn't about the Bedouin or the Malago. This was about a horrible weapon that would change the course of a peaceful territory and send it to ruin. If anything must be stopped, it would have to be the supply of tack. To be honest, it scared me to think about doing what I was about to do, but I didn't see any other choice. I wasn't even sure if it would work. I might end up looking like an idiot. No problem there, I was used to that. But if it did work, there was a good chance that Lore and I would die. Neither outcome was exactly a good one, but it was clear that I had to give it a try. "St. Dane," I said, trying to keep my voice from cracking with fear. "I believe you." Lore shot me a surprised look. She didn't know where I was going with this. Yet. "I can't explain why we're travelers, or how it's possible to travel through flumes, or how you can do the things you do, but I've seen enough to know that it's all real. I don't know if you have the power to bring down the universe, or holler, or whatever you call it, but I do believe that you can cause a hell of a lot of trouble. If toppling Denderon is the first part of your plan, then I can't let you do it." I could feel Lore stiffen next to me. She knew I had something in mind, and she wanted to be ready. St. Dane watched me with a smug smile and said,
"And how do you plan to stop me?"
"I'm not," was my answer. "I'm going to stop the supply of tack." That's when I reached into my pocket and pulled out the little ball of tack that I had taken out of the ore car in the stadium. I had put it into my pocket before closing the door to the quig pen. Now this little piece of explosive clay could be the only hope for Denderon. As I wrote before, I wasn't sure if this would work, but what I saw next made me think that it just might. For as soon as I pulled it out, I saw something that I didn't think was possible. St. Dane blinked. The smug smile dropped off his face, and I saw something in his eyes that made my heart leap. I saw fear. Up until then, he had orchestrated everything that happened on Denderon. But things were about to change, and he knew it. Seeing this in his eyes gave me a shot of confidence. I looked to Lore. She nodded. She knew what might happen to us, but she also knew that it was the only way. We were seconds away from salvation, or doomsday. The battlefield above had erupted into a clash of bodies and clubs and horses and steel. The Malago were driven by their hatred and anger, the Bedouin by their training and strength. It was going to be an even fight, which meant both sides were going to suffer huge casualties. The worst of the fighting was about to begin. St. Dane made a move to stop me.
"No!"
he shouted in panic. But before he could take a second step, I threw my little ball of tack down at the ground. There was an explosion. Not a big one, but big enough. The small ball of tack erupted and shot out a blast of flame. The explosion didn't do much damage, but that didn't matter. It was the flame I was counting on. That small, hot burst of fire ignited the tack dust on the floor. Instantly, the tiny little bits of tack began to burn. It looked like a 4th of July sparkler on the floor of the cavern as the dust ignited and shot up into the air. But more important, the eruption began to spread. With each passing second, the fizzing and popping circle of sparks grew larger. There was so much tack dust on the floor and in the air that this fire had plenty of fuel to burn. St. Dane jumped at the expanding ring of sparks and desperately tried to stamp it out with his feet.
"No! No!"
he shouted at me in anger.
For all his ability to manipulate people and twist them into doing his dirty work, he was powerless against this simple growing fire. There was an unlimited amount of fuel, and as soon as it grew big enough, the sparkling ring of fire would ignite the large vein of tack that ran through the mine. Once that happened, well, we'd all find out soon enough. St. Dane gave up trying to stop it, and shot me a look of hatred that froze the blood in my veins.
This is